going to be an amazing rock star show today. Get to know the amazing Lisa Gilmore, an incredible woman who has been in business for over 10 years now. On the show, we talked about how she was able to shift from a scarcity to abundance mindset, how she overcame financial struggles to achieve incredible success. Honestly, right here, right now, I want you to buckle up because this is going to be one of the most powerful interviews you have heard in a very long time. Here we go.
Welcome to the show that's redefining success for high achievers globally. This is where you come to hear from high achievers who are making bank, making love, making memories, and who are truly happy. And here's your host, Liz Benny.
How you getting, Ms. Cabal? Liz Benny back here. Oh, my little old Lord. I'm so excited to introduce Lisa Gilmore to the show today. How are you, my friend?
I'm good. How are you?
I am phenomenal. Come on, give us some more energy. I know that you're high in.
I know. I just had an operations meeting yesterday, so I'm a little dry.
Operations meeting can be very, very, very boring, right?
So yeah, exactly.
Man, everyone listening and watching this right now, it's going to be an absolute rock star show today. Lisa Gilmore has been in business for around 10 years now. She's just celebrating her 10-year anniversary in business, which, man, did you know the failure rate in business is ridiculous? So you, my dear, you're an anomaly. So those of you listening and watching right now, buckle up for what I think is probably going to be one of the most powerful interviews you've ever heard, because dang, this lady has walked a journey, specifically over the last 3 years, right, Lisa?
Absolutely. It's been quite the walk.
Yeah. So I'm going to be real and honest right now. You had the opportunity to come on the Happy Millionaire Show. What was it about the Happy Millionaire Show that made you go, I just have to say yes to be on this podcast?
Well, you know, it's funny because my first reaction was, wait, I'm not a millionaire, but my company is. So do I get to be on this show? Like, it was a weird, like, I'm getting asked, what? Okay. And I had to like think about it for a second. And then I was like, why do we have such a stigma over the word millionaire? Like, honestly, if I was a millionaire, who cares? Like, you know what I mean? Like, if I was personally a millionaire and I had a multi-million dollar company, like, who cares? And so I literally had to walk myself out of that like weird, like, oh, should I? And then I was like, hell yeah, I'm going to. This is awesome.
It's amazing. Well done, you. Isn't it funny? So the whole idea around the word millionaire, it's a trigger word for a lot of people, especially when you append the word happy to the front of it, because of the two of them, they don't really go together in societal norm. And it is a trigger word. And so is the word rich.
Yes.
So let's have a conversation right now about the word rich. What comes up for you when you hear the word rich?
You know, it's funny because the word rich doesn't actually go into my mind. I think I always replace it with like wealthy or, you know, because to me, rich, it does have a negative connotation of like people who are wasteful with money or didn't work hard for it. Like it was like given to them, which granted at the end of the day, if someone is a trust fund baby, good on them. That means somebody set up success for future lineage. You know, again, we shouldn't downplay that, you know? And I feel like our society does do that. So yeah, like the word rich, I guess it does have a weird negative thought to it, and it shouldn't, you know, I use the word like wealthy or well off, you know, more than those words. So that's an interesting question.
Because I think the word, you know, this show is designed to break barriers, to break the social ideas of what is possible, of what is right, of what is real for people so that they can live their ultimate life. Because, you know, this show is all about helping people build businesses and lives that they absolutely love. So I love the fact that you said, you know, am I a millionaire? My business is a multi-million dollar business. Like, you know, where do I fit in this? So thanks for the transparency there. That is absolutely amazing. So you have been in business now for 10 years. You've walked a path specifically over the last 3 years. You had a bit of a downer in around 3 years ago. You were in Africa. Tell us about that.
Yeah. So to back up. So yes, I've had my business for 10 years this past December. Prior to that, I worked for design firms. I've been in the design industry for like 15, 16 years. And so I started my business. I was 25. I was naive, hungry, and ready to kick ass. Like I was just here for it, you know? And my business came out of a need because I relocated back to Florida from Chicago. And at the time, everyone was very much like gray, white, blue interior design, which is fine and great, but I don't design that way. And so for the longest time, I thought that I was like, oh, I couldn't really find a great job. So I started my business. And I realized recently, actually, I kind of started my business out of fear for not being accepted, because I was like, I didn't even want to put myself in front of those firms to be told, oh, your style's too much or this or that, you need to tone it down. So I kind of like alleviated that and just like went into business, which I that was a big epiphany for me, the realizing why I started my business in the first place from what I thought. So backing up again, like I was just hungry and I was networking and designing. I was, you know, so young and just ready to like make a stamp and truly not really having idea of what actually goes into running a profitable business. You know, you go to design school, but I didn't go to any business school. And so I was just constantly just going, and I was like running on passion. And my business for the first, you know, 7 years, thankfully survived off my passion. And then in 2018, I'm sorry, I'm getting the years confused now. 2018, I was in South Africa. I was getting through a divorce. I was with my ex-husband for a long time. And I thought I was this independent, badass, boss lady, you know, designer, which I was, but I was not financially independent. And it was a hard awakening in the fact that, you know, I was in South Africa and it was a perfect storm of things that happened. I had a client who cashed a check for a refund on a sofa or something, was like $14,000, and they had held it for like 3 months. And then I had another client who unfortunately wrote a bad check, and I purchased product off of that check. And then on top of just bad bookkeeping and not really understanding my margins and like where I was making money, I was in Africa and I was completely wiped out. I was depleted from like what I thought. And I had to call my mom and ask her to help pay my personal rent. Like, and that is, there's nothing more humbling than being, you know, 30 years old in Africa, 31 years old in Africa, and having to call your mom and be like, can't really talk right now. Things went sideways and I need some help. And so I, that was my rock bottom, because I, at the time, you know, I had my 2 employees and it was like, this is bigger than me. This is bigger than my livelihood that I obviously can't sustain, because I didn't realize how much I was like using my marriage as a crutch. And then I'm also responsible for these other women with their families. And that's a heavy weight, you know? And so I came home and I got up and I went to my attorney, who's also one of my best friends. And she's like, just so savvy in finance. And we sat down with a bottle of whiskey and went through it all. And she was like, if you keep going this way, you will not have a business. Like, it is time to wake up. And I cried and I got through it. And here we are. So that at that time I was doing about $825,000 in revenue, gross revenue. And then that year I focused so solely on profit margins, our billing, because we're a service and we weren't billing accurately. We weren't being compensated as we should have been. My team was not confident in billing, which was coming from me. Evaluated my relationship with money and personally, and like how I was raised and how to talk about money and not talk about money. And I realized that like I had to stop living in a scarcity mindset. And so in that year of being able to get really dirty, I took my business from $825,000 in revenue to $2.25 million in a year, which is insane and really hard.
Girl, massive congratulations. And I'm going to congratulate you not on the money. I'm going to congratulate you on who you chose to become in order to create that solution.
Thank you.
Like there is always, a lot of people will always go, oh my gosh, you made the money. Congrats on the final end result. Mm-hmm. The end result doesn't get there without Lisa Gilmore changing herself foundationally.
Yeah. You're the first person that's actually said that. Thank you. I really appreciate that.
You are so welcome. You are so welcome. What were some of the biggest internal shifts, other than, you know, you change your relationship with money, you change from a scarcity to abundance mindset. By the sounds of things, you also took radical ownership and responsibility for the negative stuff that was going on, and you looked at it, and you know, instead of shying away, you took on the challenge to grow. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the time people, you know, they go, oh, you know, it's all over now. But you, mm-hmm. you took this and you saw the good, you saw the bad, you saw the good. And you had this kind of epiphany where you're like, you know what, this can be so much better, but mm-hmm. I need to take personal responsibility for making it better because it's up to me. So it sounds like you took radical responsibility for it.
Absolutely.
What else? Did you go through a self-love process here? Did you go through a grieving process? What else helped that transformation happen?
Yeah. So a couple things, and you know how perfect storms line up, and, mm-hmm. and when you're in the middle of it, you're like, can I get some air, like, mm-hmm. like something. And then when you look back, you're like, oh, that is totally why that makes sense. You know, I'm so mm-hmm. grateful for that step. So for me, it was a couple things. I was raised in a very blue collar environment. My dad is an amazing, he works on cars, auto body. My mom was a homemaker, stayed home. And so we had enough to be happy, but we didn't have over that amount. And yeah, we were surviving, not thriving. Exactly. And we were happy and we were good. Like me and my sister had a great childhood, you know, like playing all the things you can imagine. And I do believe that my parents, like I reflect as an adult and like how they raised me and like being in Girl Scouts and doing all these things have built me as an entrepreneur today for sure. And so I really had to have a conversation and realize that like the way I was raised, while it was right for their house, like it's not right and conducive for the life I want to have. And so because I am working with very wealthy clients and people that are building these multi-million dollar houses and, you know, have budgets of over $500,000 for furniture, something that I could not even wrap my head around at one point, I had to say like, you know, you have to get to that point or they're not going to have confidence in you, you know, like how can I confidently design and tell these people all these things when I'm still uncertain and scared of it. So it was like, I almost had to like reframe that. So I felt like I earned a seat at the same table as them. Even though I wasn't in the same financial caliber, I needed to be in the same financial mindset caliber. Does that make sense?
100%. I love this. Please keep going. I've got so many questions.
Yeah. And so like for me, one thing that was huge in my journey was there's this book called Profit First. I'm not sure if you've heard of it. And that's Profit First is honestly what changed my business
Mr.
and my
Mike
life.
Mr. Mike Michalowicz?
Yes, it changed
I'm
my
interviewing
business.
Mr. Mike Michalowicz in 2 weeks from now for this very same show.
Oh my gosh. Well, you're going to have to tell him that he is a major fan and tell him my experience because it literally, literally changed my life. And in the beginning of his book, you know, he talks about being at his dinner table and he had like Range Rovers and all this stuff. And like, he realized with his family that he'd failed and like there was this, they were financially broke. And I remember, I will never forget this, like the line when he talks about his son or daughter brought her piggy bank and said, we're in this together and we're going to get through this. And I remember reading that and I was just sobbing because I was newly divorced. It was me, my cat and my dog in my apartment, my one bedroom apartment downtown. And I was like, okay, I don't have tons of personal debt. I actually am kind of a new leaf on life, if you will, post divorce. And I need to, I can do this. If this guy can do this with everything he has and so much money and children and a wife and all this stuff, and he can survive and write this book and do it, like I can do this. And so that really fueled me.
Lisa, then, what a, just keep going, girl. This is incredible.
I feel like I'm talking too much. And so that started it. And I really like, I got so raw with myself. Like, and I actually just did this exercise with one of my personal friends from my childhood. And I printed out like 3 months of my bank statements. And I highlighted every amount of frivolous spending, like every amount. And the amount that I was spending on happy hours, going to lunch, or even like ordering food was sickening. And I was like, I don't even like drinking wine that much. Why am I going to so many wine bars? But I realized I was depressed and I was trying to get my way forward. And so when you see that and you add up the number, I literally vomited. I was like, oh my God, I can't believe I've spent this much money, and you don't realize it. So that's an exercise I actually do like every 6 months. I like go through my bank statements and I highlight certain things. I'm like, ooh, too much. Let's reel that back, or, you know, to keep like a good pulse on it. So I did that. And then during that time, like I just, like you said, like I had to restructure my thinking and restructure literally everything in my life to get through this hard spot. And I, you know, I was still obviously with friends and things like that, but I stopped being so social and wasting money on things. I was bringing my lunch to work and I was selling clothes on Poshmark. I was picking up side jobs, doing like renderings for other interior designers, just to like get ahead of my debt that I had, which was very minimal, but to get my nest egg up and to get through it. So that's how I like changed my personal life and my personal experience with money. And then from a business side, you know, it was unfortunately finding my entrepreneurial and leadership voice, because the girls, you know, they saw all this money coming in with clients and they thought I was sitting on a gold mine, and I wasn't. And I had to learn the real cost to operate a business and realize that it's so much more than people realize, and myself included. And they even, you know, I got raw with them and I started I hate these words, micromanaging, but at the end of the day, that's what it was. I was micromanaging our time billing, how we're spending our money down to the staples, you know, and we're doing it again with my operations manager, because you want to get your expenses as low as possible. So yeah, it was just like, I think I veered a little bit here, but you know, it's just like getting so uncomfortable with money to the point where you almost feel nauseous. Like, to me, that's the beautiful part. Like, because then, you know, like you're finding the weak spot that you have to enhance. Does that make sense?
100%. Look, you have addressed so many beautiful topics in here. And I just want to say one thing that is standing out right now is the courage it takes to do the hard things to get the easy thing. And you've had this beautifully horrible journey, meaning that it's hard. It's really hard to open up your books and look at the truth. Mm-hmm. But by virtue of looking at the truth, your subconscious mind knows that something's off anyway. So there's always noise. There's noise going on there. There's noise. And like, if you are, in my mind, and I've actually gone through the exact same process that you've gone through, I literally look at, I know what all of our spending is in our house. We went from not really knowing to we have all of the line items, the coffee, and I thought to myself, oh my gosh, like this is, I just don't, it's not a free way of living.
Yeah.
But there is freedom in knowing
that
there is more than you need.
Oh, the empowerment, like it's weird that exactly like you just said, like you feel like, this isn't the way to live. I shouldn't be having a line item for my coffee spending. Like that's ridiculous. But when you start doing that, it shifts from a negative thing of, oh, because like, you know, people are like, oh, I spend my money now. I live in the now. And that's like the mindset of it, which great, cool. Everyone wants to live in the now. But like, so you think for yourself, like, oh, I'm fighting that thought of like being in the now and living free and living happy. But really what you're doing is empowering that freedom more. And like, and it's weird because I don't know how it happened for you, but for me, it was like this weird like thing. And I can't even pinpoint it, where you realize all of a sudden you're like, oh, I'm not actually scared of this. And I don't find this as a chore. This is actually fun now. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that happened for you, but for me, it was like this shift. And now I'm like not scared of it. And it's fun to like dig through and do that. And it's this weird thing that happens. And it's funny because I joke now, I'm like, oh, it's Finance Friday. I'm excited. And like, you know, like 5 years ago, no, I had my head in the sand and I was like, I'll deal with that in 3 weeks.
Or 3 years or never.
Exactly. Exactly.
For most people, it's like, look, the way to make money in business, this is the modus operandi that I've seen a lot, is look, to become a millionaire, you just got to make $1 million. Or to become a millionaire, you just focus on getting the clients, serving the clients. And I'm like, hold the phone. If you don't understand your profit margin, if you don't understand your taxing, if you don't understand where your costs are, you could literally be making all this money and there is a big, you know, plug over here and you need to plug that hole.
Yeah. And it's exhausting.
The hole, you know, is one of the fastest ways to make more money in your business is to cut expenses that you no longer need.
And it's so freeing because it's something that you can do that has immediate response. Cause like sometimes like a process, like we're talking about, it doesn't change overnight. It takes time. It takes refinement. It takes routine. It takes trust in yourself. It takes trust in other people too. Mm-hmm. But by doing that and cutting your expenses, those are immediate things you could see. And like, that's the part that I love, because I can go through, because you know how it's like when you have your phone, you're like, oh, I'll subscribe to this. And you don't realize it's like $2.99 a year or whatever. And then you go through your phone, you see all these weird subscriptions. You're like, oh my God, when was the last time I used that app? And then all of a sudden you're like, I just saved $25 a month. Cool. You know, like, and $25 is $25, but it adds up in the big picture of things. So that's one of my favorite things, is like being cutthroat with those, because it's something that you could actually see the rewards to in 30 days, you know?
Oh my gosh. I love this. And then $25, you can actually get that $25 working for you instead of it working for someone else. It's your money at the end of the day. And if you're not investing that money wisely to make it work for you, like $25 per month put somewhere that grows over time and is working for you.
Yeah.
My gosh, the impact of that is incredible. Girl, I didn't know that this is where we were going today, but I abso-freaking-lutely love this. I really
good.
You know, there is such power in knowledge. There is such power in overcoming and having the courage to look at the hard things and do the hard things. I want to take a little bit of a different approach to this right now. There has been a transition that you've gone through over the last 3 years, where you were this person who didn't really know how to run your business. You was like, you were doing well financially in terms of revenue, but not in terms of profit, not in terms of getting the actual life that you wanted. Like, people would go, oh my gosh, an $800,000 business. Whee! But the reality of that can feel like failure if you are not getting from the business what you need.
Mm-hmm.
So you've gone through these mindset shifts and you've gone through these operations shifts, which are amazing. What shifts have you made in terms of how you get clients and how you sell to your clients? For example, did you suddenly go, oh my gosh, like, I'm not charging $10,000 for that. This is actually worth a whole lot more. And I want to go for a higher caliber client. And suddenly it's a $50,000 client or a $100,000 client, for example.
Yeah, that's a great question. So, it's kind of a twofold answer. So in that time when I was like going through and realizing everything that was happening, a couple things happened. I stopped doing working on commercial interior design. We were consulting on like bars and restaurants and stuff, which is really fun. And to your point, like the comment about like, oh, an $800,000 business, like people here are like, oh my gosh, you just did that really cool new bar or that cool hotel. Like, it was an ego for me to like have people be able to publicly visit our spaces. But then when I started looking at the margins on it and the time that was going into it, like, we were not making any money. We were being basically like depleted. And so that was a really hard thing, because again, I had to have a conversation with myself of like, okay, why am I doing this? Is it ego? Because I'm getting pressed and people are excited and posting on social media, because right now in my business, it's not going so well. So I made a stark decision, absolutely no more commercial work. I was like, I don't even want to hear about it if someone calls on the phone, because I'm also the type of person that's like, oh, well, that does sound fun. So yeah, I guess I could make that work, you know? And I told my team, I was like, I don't even want to hear about it. I don't care if they call and say, we are building a huge hotel in Italy and you have to be the designer for it. I'm like, I don't want it. Like, I don't want that. It's not serving anything. So that was like a big thing. And once I did that, like, it was like our message was clearer and clients understood it. And we ended up getting such amazing residential projects, which we already had, but it was like the next step up. And I was like, oh, now we can focus completely on this. And this is exciting. So that was like one of the first things that happened. And then I did do a price increase, because as I mentioned, we're a service based and we charge hourly. And so I did a price increase in that. And from what I've been told by people, we're definitely on the higher spectrum of our area. And so I got pushback, which was hard. And I do feel like there's a solid like 3 months when you make a price increase for the first one to catch on. In that 2 to 3 months, you're like, oh, did I make a mistake? Did I make a mistake? Mm-hmm. But it just takes that first contract, be like, nope, I didn't make a mistake. Here we go. And so that was a challenge that I did. And then additionally, I also like really started paying attention to my team and like my strengths and weaknesses and their strengths and weaknesses. And then like, I hired a CPA that's detailed for interior design firms. I got a bookkeeper that is, you know, practices well in interior design firms. Most recently, I hired my director of operations, and we're building out the team, because at the end of the day, like, I realized that I was restricting us because I was scared of like spending more money on people because I wasn't sure of it. And so, I think I got off track a little bit. I'm sorry.
No, you totally didn't get off track. This is absolutely amazing. Because where you've taken it, like you've basically said you cut off that which was not for you anymore, and you did it with energy, but also with actions too. So no, that's not for me anymore. I understand that. Don't even show it. And that actually, I mean, that's a burn the boats type thing. So well done there. That takes courage. And also, you know, saying to your team, just shield me from this. We're going over here.
Yeah.
And then staying consistent in that 3-month period where you felt like things were a little like there were crickets. Is that an American? You understand what I mean?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
And in that 3-month period, that can be the time when most people would go, maybe I should just go back and do that. Maybe I'll go back and do the thing that I knew. Yep. And it's the comfortably uncomfortable, because you know it's the known uncomfortable. But you were going to this area where you believed that there was a new version of life for you, and the a new version of business, a new version of profit, a new version of a new caliber of client, a higher caliber of client. And it required you to stay the course even when it was hard. So that takes courage. Well done, you.
Thank you. And actually, it's funny because we're experiencing something very similar now with the same line of conversation. And that is, you know, with COVID and everything like that, it's impacted our industry on the supply demand and also labor. Like the building industry and home space is, we're so like beautifully busy. Like we are, like everyone's wanting to redo their houses, build whatever. And it's amazing. And our industry is so fortunate. But at the same time, we have like all this stuff stacking up, all these design like people, and we can't get the product. We can't get enough trades out to finish the job. And so to put it in perspective, in 2021, we had one full residence install in January 2021 for the entire year. We usually have 8 to 10 full house installs per year. So like that tells you right there, like how the supply and labor shortage has impacted our timeline of events. So now what we're doing is we're having to reevaluate our timelines and what we've promised and our design timelines and our project timelines. And so we are so inundated with work, and we have a wait list into the summer of reservation fees for people to work with us, which is amazing, which again was a huge thing that changed the conversation of money with clients and stuff like that, to take reservation fees and stuff like that and show your value up front. But anyways, I just had to make hard decisions because we had two projects come to our table on a builder that we have worked with many times, and they're both over $2 million custom builds, but they needed us to jump on it within the next 2 weeks or 2 months. And I'm like, I need 6 months to properly get in this project. And we had to decline them. And honestly, it happened this morning, and it's scary because I was like, oh my gosh, am I shooting myself in the foot? I just passed up $2 million custom homes. But in my heart, I know I'm making the right choice for myself and my team, because we're all so overworked and we are trying so hard to keep up with the pressures that are going on right now. And while it's very appealing to sign that contract and get that money, and know, like, I just know in a year from now, I will be regretting it, because it would be nothing but false expectations from the beginning for that client. And so I'm in a new phase now of like setting the standard for starting the projects and how we're recalibrating that. And I know. And so it's funny because this had this conversation, I'm like, okay, Lisa, it's going to be that 3-month period again. It's going to feel crazy, but we're going to get through it, and it's going to be fine. And in a year, we're all going to be breathing and happy and healthy, and hopefully all millionaires.
This is amazing. So for me, that shows a high degree of personal integrity and also personal awareness as well, and team awareness, because here's the thing. I've been around my fair share of miserable millionaires and happy millionaires. And the happier ones, they are the people who are beating by their own drum. They're doing what is right for them. They're trusting their intuition. and they're not doing those quick grabs that mm-hmm. could be quote unquote easy in the short term, but they end up being very long-term burns. So mm-hmm. it sounds like you're making a really solid decision for yourself. And again, thank it might you. Be that three, it's uncomfortable.
It's very uncomfortable. Very uncomfortable.
So to be able to make an uncomfortable decision though, there has to be a vision on the other side of Holy Grail. What are you moving towards? You've got the new director of operations in. As a visionary who has a director of operations as well, like I know what that's like. It's like, building in a different way. And it requires mm-hmm. a different level of leadership from, you know, visionaries like ourselves. Where are you taking this business and where are you leading the business, the director of operations? Where are you going?
That's such an amazing question. And it's one that I'm still finding the answer to be completely mm-hmm. honest. Mm-hmm. So I recently started reading a book and I haven't finished. I'm kind of a slow reader. It's called Get a Grip. I'm not sure if you've heard of it. And it was the first time, I'm almost embarrassed to admit this because I read this book in the past year. It is the first time that I actually heard of the term like visionary and then like seeing that umbrella of people under you. Mm. And when I saw that, I don't know if you read the book, but like when I saw the diagram of how they drew it out, I'm such a visual person, I was like, it was like, I felt like I got punched in the stomach a little bit, but then I also felt like I got fanned off and like fed grapes because I was like, oh, I'm not doing it wrong. I'm just in the wrong spot. Uh-huh. Like I can't do the day to day. I can't uh-huh. keep up with all that stuff. And I was literally killing myself. Like I was so sick and I was like headaches and not sleeping well. Nausea, like I was just so sick and physically and mentally sick. And I realized I was like, okay, I need people to help me like do this. And I'm like choking my business by trying to do it all and I'm hurting my team, you know? And so I hiring the director of operations, my goal is that it allows me to be the bigger visionary that I have always been meant to be. But then also really hone in on just even more of the experience for my company and my clients. Like that is the biggest takeaway for me is I want my clients just to feel like they are worthy, they are valuable, they live hard, busy lives, and they deserve everything we're doing for them. Because at the end of the day, that's important for design too. And I used to think, oh, I just do this vain thing where, you know, I'm just decorating houses. But really like, our clients are surgeons that are providing life-saving surgeries for people. They need a place that they can rest and rejuvenate. And so when I, again, switched my narrative to what I was doing, it helped me also want to make more money and charge what I was worth, you know? And so you'll have to check back with me in about 6 months because I'm writing the narrative right now as we speak. And, you know, like I said, with COVID and everything that went on in my I'm in a long distance relationship with a Canadian and the border closure, it was very challenging personally. And because like you said, like I paid off my student loans this year, which was a huge feat, and having a profitable company, I'm like, oh, I'm not running this business on a scarcity mindset anymore. And I've actually achieved these goals. So what is my next step and what do I want that to be? And so I'm actually writing that chapter right now and dreaming of it.
Oh, wow. The only thing I want to say to that is dream beyond what you're even dreaming, what you think is possible. Lisa, anyone watching or listening to this right now who has, you know, done 8, 9, 10 figures, they'll see the mark of greatness in you right now. So I just wanted to get like, you are amazing. I'm excited to see where you're going to be in 1 year, 5 years, and 10 years from now. It's amazing. And it's really, really cool to see you reading the book, Get a Grip. It's amazing. Rocket Fuel by Geno Wickman, who is the same author of that. Rocket Fuel was a pivotal shift for me when I read that, was a pivotal shift for me because it just helped me understand that, you know, I might be great at certain things in business, but I should not try to be good at all things. That would be debilitating.
100%. Yeah. And like Sarah Blakely, I don't know if you're familiar with her, creator.
I love her.
Oh, me too. And so I've been using this a lot and I'm like, I keep saying it because I'm like, maybe one day I'll meet her. I was watching her masterclass, which if you haven't watched it, I highly recommend it. It's
It's the only masterclass I bought.
Oh, it's so good, isn't it? And like her energy. And one line that she said that just hit me so hard was, the biggest thing you can do for your business is identify your weaknesses, hire them, and watch them soar. And that's the thing that I've been really focusing on, is rather than hiding my weaknesses and doing the fake it till you make it, I'm like airing out my weaknesses. And I'm like, all right, I suck at this. Who wants it? You know?
Yeah.
It's yours.
It's so liberating. It's so liberating. So what does Lisa get up to for fun? What do you do?
Oh my gosh. Well, like I mentioned, I have a German Shepherd dog and I just love playing with her. She's like, brings so much joy to me. I'm working on my own personal creativity because that is something that has taken a back burner over the last 10 years, and all my creativity goes to the business. And I was born and raised in a very creative artistic family. So I just started taking pottery classes. So I'm learning how to throw on a wheel. I actually have a burn on my hand from the wheel. I'm like, are you supposed to have injuries from pottery? And like blood was on my thing. I was trying to look at things I was doing. It's wrong. I'm not meant to be here. I'm like, just keep going. You can do this. And I made a bowl. So that was a really hard thing. So I'm working on my personal creativity time. And my partner, Derek, he's amazing. He's in the process. We're starting immigration. He's going to be moving to the United States. So it's really exciting to focus on my personal life and our relationship and what that looks like for me, and how, you know, my business will promote the life that we want, and being bi-coastal between British Columbia and Florida. And so just really kind of honing in on those things and what makes me tick, and not running my life through my business anymore, which I have done for many years.
Wow. That part there, by the way, this all sounds amazing. But the part that I love the most is, hey, I am not going to let my business rule my life anymore. I am me. My business is designed to serve me, not the other way around.
And that's a hard, valuable lesson that takes, it's really hard, especially when you're a creative entrepreneur, because you put so much of yourself, and you're like, when you're a designer or an artist, or all entrepreneurship is obviously hard. In my opinion, when you're selling your talent, it's a little harder because you're really putting yourself out there. You're like, oh, someone's really got to like this, or there, no one's going to buy it, you know? And so you get into this mindset and this like energy of like constantly doing that. And it's good because it gets you to a certain point, but then it's hard to pull yourself away, you know? So it's really important to do those exercises.
100%. In another book that for everyone listening and watching, and certainly for you, Lisa, that I would recommend right now, if I can be so bold as to make a recommendation, is The Values Factor by Dr. John DeMartini. I actually interviewed him for the show. And some of the questions that I'm about to ask you, he quite literally couldn't answer them because they are so beyond his values. For example, one of the questions that I ask at the end of the show is, what's the last thing you bought and why? And he quite literally said, I don't buy anything. It's not in my values. I get someone else to buy me things.
That's hilarious.
Wow. And he quite literally lives on a ship and he cruises around the world. He lives on a big super yacht and he cruises around the world. He's living his life 100% by his values and hiring out the things that are just not valuable to him that he still needs in his life.
That's awesome.
Like buying food and doing the cleaning. Like, it's amazing.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. That's awesome.
So Values Factor has been instrumental for me in my life because, it's allowed me to live a life that, you know, is very much values-based. Like, what is important to me? My integrity, my health, my happiness. These things are fundamentally important to me. So doing things that cost me the things that matter most to me is just something that I'm not going to do.
Yeah. I'm going to look into that book. Thank you.
Oh, you're so welcome. So we're in the part of the show where we have a little bit of fun. I'm going to ask you some round robin questions. And the first one, of course, I've already given it away. What was the last thing you bought and why?
The last thing I bought and why? I'm trying to remember. I think I ordered a new laptop case.
What'd you buy?
This is one of those things. I don't know if you're the same way, but like, I get so caught up in like phone cases and laptop cases, and like, I'm like, oh, it's part of my identity. Like, I want it to be like cool. It can't just be black, or it can't just be whatever. Like, it's got to be like a color that I feel. It's completely a waste of time how much I can go into a rabbit hole of laptop cases and stuff.
But that's allowing your creativity to come out through, you're expressing yourself through through purchasing that. That's amazing.
And I'll be honest, I don't remember the one I picked because I looked at so many that I couldn't decide. So I don't remember what I picked. So when it arrives, I'll be surprised again.
I love that. Next question. What are your top three movies?
Oh goodness. It's a documentary, Diana Vreeland, that I have to travel. She is one of my like iconic people. When I'm in a rut, I watch that. When I need inspiration, I watch that. When I just need to feel like, I don't know, I watch it too much. It's so good. So that, I think the second one would be American Hustle. I love that movie so much. I escape in it. I think like the costumes, the music, the set, it just makes me want to like, it like feeds this part of my soul. Cause I was always like a really good kid and followed all the rules. And even to this day, I'm like such a rule breaker. Derek makes fun of me because if the crosswalk light is on, I'm like, oh no, you can't go across. The light's not on. He's like, oh yeah, I don't want to break the rules. But like, it makes me like want to do cocaine and dance in a bathroom or something really weird. And I would never do that in real life. So it makes me live on this like side that doesn't exist in me. So I love that movie. And then, the third movie, that's a tough one. I don't know the third one.
I love it. We'll leave it there. That
yeah,
is incredible.
Leave it there. Yeah.
And so who has most positively impacted your life?
Oh, goodness gracious. Oh, so many people that I could give credit to. From like a large spectrum, I would definitely say Diana Vreeland. I am obsessed with like how she pioneered for women and, you know, magazine and editorial and fashion. And she discovered like Barbara Streisand and had them put her nose on the cover and call it out, you know, like I love that so much. So she is a huge influence in the design spectrum. Kelly Wurzler is, I discovered her when I was young and working in a design firm. And I just saw like this whole new world of design that I just could not wait to be a part of. And I just think she's such an iconic creator and beautiful person. And then in my daily life, I would say my partner, Derek, like he just really inspires me to be better and lets me know that it's okay when I have a bad day, you know?
Oh, what a gift. When you're in a beautiful relationship where your significant other allows you or helps you be the better version of yourself, but also allows mm-hmm. you to have those moments where you can crumble, but the crumble doesn't mean you're weak. The crumble can be the destruction of what doesn't need to be there anymore and mm-hmm. the creation of what needs to be there in its place. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
You're amazing.
Yeah. His strength and our tenacity in our relationship long distance through COVID, just it brought so much to the forefront in my self that I didn't even know I had. And I'm just so immensely proud, you know?
Oh, wow, girl. That's so cool. So what was your very first job?
My very first job was, you're going to laugh. I've had many jobs and they're all very weird. My very first job, I was about like 14, 15, and I would spend the summers in North Georgia mountains with my grandparents. And I sold snacks on the Blue Ridge Scenic Railway on a train in a commissary car.
What?
So I sold snacks on a train in the mountains between Georgia and Tennessee.
That is so fun.
So weird. I know.
Oh my gosh.
And then my first real job was at a retirement home in my hometown, which I think also was a big part of what taught me customer service, patience, and compassion in business. Dealing with retirements and elderly people transitioning I am so grateful for that time in my life.
100%. There's an incredible show here. It's on Netflix. I'm hoping it's shown all around the world, but it's about the depression that is actually in the retirement home areas. And they brought in a ton of little kids and then they integrated them with the elderly folk, and the depression rates dropped. It was just amazing. Just really,
I have to look that up. I would love to watch that. I can definitely attest to that. And I think that having that job at such a young age, and I had the job for like 4 or 5 years, and it really just taught me compassion from a different level. It taught me life and watching people, like these residents would come in totally normal, like grandparents, and I would watch some of them deteriorate with Alzheimer's or, you know, things that happen. And to watch that in real time at being 16, 17 years old, It's an experience that I was so humbling, and I'm so glad I have it because I do think it helps me lead better.
Oh, I love this. I really, really love this. Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, have you heard of her?
Mm-mm.
She wrote an amazing book called Life Lessons, and it's Lessons of the Dying, and something along those lines. I can't remember the subtitle, but I've read that book, and I'm dyslexic. I don't read a lot of books, but I've read mm-hmm. that particular book 3 times.
Really? Oh, I'd have to check that out too.
Yeah. So On Death and Dying, I think is what it's called. Lessons of the, she was helping again in the retirement areas. This is amazing. You are such an amazing soul. I
Thank
love
you.
This.
You
Speaking
too.
Of this, one of the next questions here, interestingly enough, is what would be your last meal request?
Pizza.
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 And is it deep dish? Is it
It's any kind of pizza. Like, I just love, okay, let me take that back. It can't have fruit on it. I'm a cheese pizza with like basil, garlic, uh-huh. red sauce,
uh-huh.
maybe a little pepperoni if I'm feeling spicy, you know, red pepper flakes. But like, I love pizza so much. My middle name is May, M-A-E. And so my dad, since I was a kid, to this day, still called me Pizza May. Like, I'm 35 years old and my dad still calls me Pizza May because that's like literally my favorite food in the entire world.
Oh my gosh. I love you. Are you Italian of origin?
I am. Yes, I am.
It's so funny because a lot of people here in New Zealand ask me my ethnicity a lot. And they're like, are you? Because I use my hands a lot. And a lot of people actually think that I'm Italian because of the amount of pasta I eat as well. I mean, I love that. Awesome. Me and pasta, we are best friends.
Yes. I just got Derek a pasta maker for Christmas. So I'm like, that was a total selfish gift, but I can't.
I adore that. Couple of final questions here. What's the best place in the world you have traveled?
Paris. It's my favorite. Like, I realize it's cliche and, you know, it's Paris, but for me, it just represents a lot in my life. It was the first place I traveled like big out of the country, and I was going through such a like interesting time in my life, fresh out of my divorce, and the fashion and the culture and the food and the architecture and the art, like it has everything I need. Like, if I can one day have, you know, a Parisian flat, I would be so happy.
Wow. It's so funny. You were talking about the Parisian flag, and I mean, I miss America. I want an American flag in my office. Yeah.
So
I think we're all missing traveling. Okay. Final question here. You have $1 million in your hands. You mm-hmm. have to give it away to someone or something, some organization, whatever it is. Who do you give it away to and why?
It would be a toss up between two. One would be either Girl Scouts of America. I would give it to them because I think it's just such an amazing, amazing program that I feel like instilled a lot into my, who I am today. Or I would give it back to my school system from when I was a child. So I believe that people should, like, I don't know, I've always thought this, and maybe it's crazy and, you know, getting into taxes and stuff, but like, I feel like once you make like a certain amount of money, you should be asked to give in like a certain percentage of your taxes back to where you're from, like your school of where you're from, or like, you know, and just giving back into your community. Cause I think that would be so huge. And, you know, here in the States and in Florida, like, school and education is sometimes not treated so well. And I think that if I had the opportunity to do that and encourage, you know, arts education and things like that, I would definitely do that through school here in Florida.
Oh, wow. I love, 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 love this. So we're coming up to the end here. What would be one final thing that you would love to say to people who are listening? Maybe they've made $1 million. Maybe they've made 10, 20, 30, 40, 50. Maybe they're a billionaire right now. And they may be a little bit unhappy. Or maybe mm-hmm. they're on the way to making their first million. And I think that making the money is just going to solve all their problems. So if you were to help them become happy in business and in life, what would be one final thing that you'd love to say to them from your heart?
Well, I would say that old rap song, "More Money, More Problems," is definitely real. So don't think the millions is just going to solve everything. And I would say that you really have to like control your personal relationship with money, because at the end of the day, if your business is on the brink of making millions, or maybe you're already there, and you're feeling stressed and overwhelmed, like, oh my God, I have all this money and all this responsibility and this, where am I head? How do I get through this? Like, honing in your relationship with money will truly change and define the narrative, the everything, the tone, everything. And you'll be able to go at it with such a different, clearer mind and not such an emotional mind. And so I think that's the biggest advice I have for somebody, is really taking your head out of the sand and having a true conversation with money and like, and what you want from it. And then the rest will follow through, of course, with consistency and tenacity.
Girl, I absolutely freaking love that. I've loved spending this time with you today. Thank you so much for rocking it out with me here. Where do people find out about the incredible, amazing Lisa Gilmore?
Awesome. Thank you. It's just been so much fun. So obviously my website, my name, lisagilmoredesign.com. And then social media for like Instagram and stuff, we're at Lisa Gilmore Design. Pretty active on social media and things like that. So we're always doing updates and project walkthroughs and new press and projects and just all the ins and outs of it. So that's definitely how you can find us.
That's a wrap, folks. Liz and the Kapow team hope you've loved this episode of the Happy Million Show. Please help us to spread this mission far and wide by leaving us a 5-star review with an amazing comment, and be sure to subscribe so you're notified with future episodes. We've got some incredible guests lined up for you to hear from to help you build both a business and a life you absolutely love. Full of fun, freedom, family time, friends, fulfillment, fitness, and other Fs. You can fill in the blank. Subscribe now, and for your daily cup of kapower, head over to lizbenny.com. Come on, you know you want to.